This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 169 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And you're lying. You're in Maryland.
I know. I'm not in Hartford, am I? No, I'm in Maryland, the remote UAV Digest studios in the land of very little internet. And so it's been quite a challenge, David, but I think we're connected with enough bandwidth to be somewhat intelligible.
Well, okay, we have enough bandwidth. I don't know about the intelligible part. And I'm David in Philly. We'd like to congratulate the Cubs for their 108th year drought is now over. So
that's right.
And that was kind of a momentous thing, and I didn't stay up to watch it, luckily. But I had a lot of coworkers here, even here in Philly, that sort of were baseball hungover, but it's a good thing. In this day and age of all sorts of other ugly things that are going on that soon will be over, baseball was a good thing to have.
Yes.
So we don't have a lot on our plate, but we got enough to talk about. Tonight we'll talk about commercial UAVs. 500 days in space is a long time for one drone. Some commentaries, and then my co-host put this in from his Connecticut Yankee, from Samuel Clemens. Often it seems such a pity that Noah and his party did not miss the boat, otherwise known as Mark Twain. So I guess with that little bit of wisdom, I am about to close the show. With that bit of wisdom, we should start the show. Well, our first story comes from expouav.com. The Impact of Commercial UAVs on Corporate America, Part 1. And this was one Plaza wrote about the impact of UAV package delivery and the package delivery industry and on companies that want to use that industry to ship products to customers. So what did you think about this, Max?
It was pretty interesting. I'm really waiting for Part 2 to come along as well. But Juan writes that shipping costs have been going up. That's been documented. A company like Amazon.com, of course, doesn't like that, and they want to find ways to reduce their shipping costs, not increase them. So they've been opening a lot of distribution centers and have more, I think, coming online. And when you see some of the statistics, you sort of get an idea of maybe why they want to have all these distribution centers.
Well, they want distribution centers within a 20-mile radius of everybody. I went down to Patuxent River on Saturday for an air show, and we were driving down in southern Delaware on the Delmarva Peninsula, and there was this huge building. I was like, what the heck is that? Enormous building, and it was a giant Amazon distribution center. It was huge. It was sort of surprising that I'm used to fulfillment centers and distribution centers, but this thing was enormous, Max.
Yeah. Now, just imagine that with a distribution center like that, and the fact that 44% of the U.S. population lives within a 20-mile radius of these distribution centers. You can see where they're going. Think fleets of drones that can move product from those distribution centers to customers. You know, I still have some reservations about it, David. There's some issues, some of them we've talked about. But fleets of delivery drones are probably a lot cheaper than fleets of conventional trucks and other delivery vehicles.
Well, let's break it down. You got the cost of the truck, the cost of the fuel, the cost of the driver,
which is probably the big component.
So those three things alone, now you make it a UAV, you've got maybe a pilot. I mean, in the goal would be autonomy.
Sure.
The truck or the UAV has got a battery that's rechargeable, so you're not burning and losing that. And last but not least, you don't have the expenses directly involved with a human, like health care and salaries and paid vacation and time off. All of those issues, drones don't worry about that, at least not yet. If we suddenly get to a point where they are thinking for themselves, maybe that'll start.
Yeah, can you imagine the autonomous drones decide they want a union? One of the things that the author here points out is sort of speculating that in the future, you may see private delivery fleets of UAVs. This is sort of a different scenario than one where companies like UPS and FedEx and DHL and all the others are moving a lot of product around to customers. But, you know, maybe large companies like Amazon.com or even others not nearly as large might be able to field their own fleets of delivery drones. I guess part of it, David, may hinge on whether the technology that allows this in the end, plus the regulatory environment, of course, but the technology becomes commoditized to the point where, you know, you can go to a DJI or whoever and buy a fully functional package delivery drone. So you may be able to maintain your own fleet, even if you're a small business. There's some interesting possibilities here.
Or you could subcontract out to the bigger businesses, because part of delivery and retail is scalability. You're going to want a lot more drones in late November, early December than you're going to want in July. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's seasonal delivery, certainly. And of course, it may be more cost effective to have an autonomous fleet than it does to have a delivery system that's based around manpower. Because like you point out, in a seasonal business, it's much harder to manage manpower than it is to just manage hardware. I mean, you can just park a drone and bring it out again in a few months. It's a little different when, you know, you have employees.
You weren't about to say you were going to park an employee somewhere for a couple of months.
Yeah, it's called a layoff, right? Furlough. But anyway, interesting article. Part two, I guess there's a part two. Maybe it's out. We'll have to watch for that. I'm curious to see where Juan Plaza takes this.
So the next story is from Business Insider. The X-37B kind of looks like a space shuttle, but it got no people in it. And it's been in orbit now for over 500 days. That's a long time, Max, for something that's been chugging along all by itself.
It really is. They've had some other lengthy flights of the X-37B, but still no one knows someone knows, but the general public doesn't know what the mission is here. It's kind of a mystery, isn't it?
It's a bit of a mystery. A little background. The original X-37A was a NASA program to create a space shuttle that could be used for transporting small satellites as a sort of cost-effective way to boost from the shuttle to satellites. Well, that went furlough, and DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Administration, took the program over and created the X-37B for the Air Force. Now, it's got a shuttle, it's got a bay, it one of them has been in orbit for 674 days. The one currently is up for 500 days. But nobody's really quite sure what it's doing up there. There's some speculation that it's spying on the Chinese space station, or it's learning to be an anti-satellite weapon. It's very, very secretive. It's kind of an odd secret program that the Air Force makes readily available that, yes, we have it. Yes, it's flying. Yes, it's been up there forever. We're hiding it in plain sight, but no, we're not going to tell you what it does. But it's the ultimate drone, and there's a lot of people who speculate that it is pretty self-aware and self-sufficient, that it does what it needs to do without much monitoring on the ground or interaction with the ground.
There are, of course, lots of theories, some of them very strange, about what this little autonomous drone spaceship is doing. The one I like the best, David, is the one that speculates that it really isn't unmanned. There's a guy in there, and he's in suspended animation, and they're testing that technology for long distance space missions, like to Mars. That's the most creative.
I've missed that one. Yeah. The problem with anything like this is it may have a very innocent, or it's being flown by the United States Air Force, so of course there's that component. But anytime there's any sort of lack of information, people fill in the gaps. So it is still impressive that we have baby space shuttles chugging along and up in orbit for 674 days and 500 days. And they keep expanding the envelope. And so they are expecting the one that's currently up there now for 500 days might go for 700, which is almost another half year, three quarters of a year. So it's a long time for something to be up there and then return home safely. So our next story comes from unmannedsystems.com and part 107, what we got, what we didn't, what we need. Some of the rules about part 107 are everybody's sort of happy with it, but now the cracks are starting to show and people are starting to complain. Would you agree with that, Max?
Yeah, this article is a pretty good review of the major areas, the major rules in part 107 here in the United States. But they make several points about which ones represent real challenges, especially for commercialization. And the restrictions on visual line of sight, of course, is one of the big ones. We were talking about package delivery, and that's kind of difficult if you're limited to within visual line of sight. Of course, as they point out in the article, pretty much all of the rules in Part 107 are waivable. But we start out with that as one of the big constraints. Another one, of course, being restrictions on flight over people.
And that makes sense. Well, both of those, if we're talking about package delivery, are kind of important. You should be able to fly over people if you're going to deliver packages to people. I think all of us are aware that this is going to eventually go away, and we will have these regulations. But you know, I still say they did a good job on 107. Yes, it didn't go far enough for a lot of people, but it was a really good start. You know, we really shouldn't put our nose down on it, at least for a while.
Yeah, I agree. There are also some interesting challenges here. One of them is the fact that there are no certification required, no airworthiness requirements, I should say, for UAVs. And you know, as it's been pointed out by I think a number of people, under the sort of the baseline Part 107, that's kind of okay. But when you start adding the possibility of waivers, so you know, beyond visual line of sight waiver for flying over people, suddenly you kind of enter a different realm where you can argue that maybe there should be airworthiness requirements for at least some of the drones. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of tough. Like you said, David, I think the FAA did a really good job getting something out in front of us. But taking it to the next level, if you will, is kind of posing a lot of challenges. You know, how to work that out is going to be difficult, I think.
Yeah, well, time will tell. We'll be, and hopefully we'll be able to still do this podcast by the time they get there, get that figured out. So we'll see. Let's take another story from unmannedsystems.com. Waves of innovation. NOAA, or the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, in 2008 created an unmanned aircraft systems program for use in NOAA operations. So this is a quick story about how NOAA, since 2008, which is almost 8 years, was sort of ahead of the curve on using drones and UASs, kind of like the military, but for civilian work and chasing oil spills and storms, etc. And a follow-on story of this was from the Tahlequah Daily Press. Did I think I said that right, Max?
That's how I would guess it to be pronounced.
And this was Cherokee Nation Technologies continues support NOAA-led program of helping forecasters predict hurricanes. Cherokee Nation Technologies is a Native American company based on the Cherokee Nation. And they've been working with NOAA and NASA on programs. So this is kind of a nice diversity. You know, unfortunately, we think of a lot of Native Americans as casinos. This is a completely different aspect of it. And it, part of it was the SHOUT team.
Yeah, the SHOUT team. I like that. That stands for Sensing Hazards with Operational Unmanned Technology, the NOAA SHOUT team. So, yeah, the Cherokee Nation's technology has been working on some of these projects. Some of them involve a Global Hawk that's been flying sort of in and around some of the hurricanes we've had lately. And the Global Hawk is probably a good aircraft to do that. David, being, you know, on the larger end of the scale, you probably need some aircraft mass if you're going to be mixing it up with hurricanes.
Yeah, that's why we use 130s and P3s. But yeah, no, the Global Hawks are, the NASA's been using them. The nice thing about the Global Hawk is because of its size, it can have lots of sensors on it. So besides being able to fly into the hurricane, you're also delivering a large package and sensor suite to gather the data you need where you wouldn't be getting it off of a smaller aircraft. So in this case, size is more important than speed or anything like that.
And we also see that they're not only using the Global Hawk, but some smaller UAS, and they're using those to go out there and get some aerial imagery of damage after the storms or post-storm damage. The nice thing about that is that they can immediately provide that information to, well, not only the National Weather Service, but also the local emergency management agency. So, you know, getting that information out quickly is really important when you have a lot of damage, a lot of injuries potentially resulting from a significant hurricane. So, yeah, another great application.
I put this in thinking that, you know, well, you and I need to be political. You know, it's 1 week. This is our last podcast for this election season. And I've decided I really don't want to deal with it, but we should talk about it anyway.
Yeah.
This was from UAS Magazine. D-Drone, D-E, capital D-R-O-N-E, provides drone security for presidential debates. A Germany company, D-Drone, has been used to protect the presidential candidates when they were having their debates earlier last month.
Yeah, this is another example of the drone sensing technology that we've been seeing from several different companies. In this case, like I think most of the others, you would call it a passive system of sensors. So basically, they're looking for, listening for, measuring radio the transmissions, if you will, associated with drones in order to sort of detect the the signs that what might be out there is in fact a drone. I think that they, in this case, with the presidential candidates, they didn't find any. There were no drones out there bent on something improper. So the political commentary is, well, maybe that's too bad, but we won't go there. But again, it's another example of situations where people feel that we need to be protected, or at least have the knowledge of someone flying in an area that it should be restricted.
Sensitivity, I think we've talked about this a lot. For every drone, there's a counter drone now, or a counter drone mission software, etc. So, and the escalation keeps growing. We've seen from hawks to nets to just electronically downing them. And so for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. And that's definitely true for UAVs.
I guess so. All right. We have one feedback item, David, that is very interesting.
It is. I got an email from Michael. Hey, David, hope you and Max are doing well. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up. The UAV Digest is featured in my list of drone blogs to follow in 2017. Great work and best of luck as 2017 rolls around. It's a neat list. It is. And we're happily squared in the middle, but Michael gave us some very nice comments that, you must be listening to the show, but if you're hearing this, you are already listening to the show, but tell your friends about our show. We'll put a link to the show notes, and it's gotten to be a crowded space. When we first started this, it seemed like we were out in the middle of nowhere. It's gotten to be a little more dense. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. I think I agree with you, David. It is a great list. In 70 blogs and podcasts and things like that, it is a big number. When I look through it, I see a number of them that I recognize, certainly, and also a lot of them, though, that I was unfamiliar with. So I think I've got some work cut out for me to spend some time exploring all these different resources. Sometimes people who produce content, whether it's a podcast or a blog, view others in the same space or the same topic area as being competitors. And I mean, I don't think we really do at all. I mean, each one of them is different. The content creator, the writer, the podcaster, whatever, has their own unique take on things and presentation styles and all that. They're all different. The only bad news about that, I guess, is that there are too many of them to follow all of them really closely. So take a look at this list. Pick and choose what you like, and share the list with other people who might benefit from some of the great sites that are mentioned there. So thanks to Michael for that.
One of the things that we've always in our other show is, and I know this from listening to other podcasting. While this is just blogs and podcasts, etc., in the podcasting world, we all don't really seem to compete with each other. We all, one of those things that always comes up in the Doctor Who podcasts I listen to is somebody comes up with a new Doctor Who podcast and it's still different from everybody else's. Somebody's taken a different take. And the same thing goes with our Airplane Geeks podcast, that what we do is different from what UCAP does, and we're all in this together. And I think the UAV world of blogosphere or podcasting is kind of growing in the same way. We're all finding our niches, and we're all out to promote the industry, and that's a good thing, you know? And so, like Max says, you're not going to be able to follow it all, but maybe you'll find two or three that you can really get used comfortable with, and those'll be your go-tos. But just for Max and I's sake, make sure this podcast is one of them.
Yeah, we hope, yes. All right. Well, I think that's about it for this episode. We want to thank all of you, of course, for listening. We really appreciate it. We love the feedback that we get from you. I know we don't often have time to talk about all of it on the show. We certainly like the feedback that we get in our Slack listener team. That's a great space for folks who are interested in this topic. But of course, as always, you can find us at our homepage, theuavdigest.com. This is episode 169. So if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that's at theuavdigest.com/169.
So I guess with that, you need to follow us on Twitter, which is at UAV Digest, on Facebook, facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can purchase our swag at our Cafe Press store. We'd love for you to leave some feedback to iTunes and or Google Play and or Stitcher.com. That way other people can find us. And last but not least, you can become a patron of the show. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors, and we'd love for you to visit their websites and tell them that you came from us. So I guess with that, if you're here in the United States, hopefully next week we'll be able to talk to you and there won't be any major turmoil because of Tuesday. So this
either
is
that or we'll be in Canada.
Or we will have moved. So with that, this is David in Philly.
And Max can't wait to get home to Hartford.
Thanks for listening.